Chapter 86. Darrow. Nival Night. I wait in the small chamber beneath the House of Bounty's speaking floor. Periodically I glance at the entrance, hoping to see it open, and Cassius waltz in, carrying a box and wearing his cocksure smile. As time ticks on, anxiety starts to creep in. Diomedes' condemnation of his uncle and his wicked schemes is muffled through the walls. Now and then the stone rumbles with the anger of the Moon Lords. There is a pause that must mean they are voting for a hegemon. A cheer trembles through the stone, followed by Diomedes' voice and a grumble of anger. Diomedes' voice again, then silence. A moment later, Diomedes comes through the chamber's door. He now wears a pure black cape and a ring with a black stone that swirls with motes of dust.
I am hegemon. It is time.
I glance at the room's other door. Lysander and Cassius are not here yet.
No. I had wanted to present the lords the truth, then the heads of Atlas and Far at the same time to show no favoritism. But Lysander is late. So you have the honor of going first.
You told them about Lysander's involvement with Atlas?
Yes, I revealed to them its full nature and the mission I have charged him with. They also know you saved my life and of your heroism on Europa. They do not know what you carry, however.
He nods to the box in my lap.
Come.
He departs and leaves the door open behind him. I follow with a last glance at the other door. I walk through the stone tunnel to the sound of Diomedes' voice.
Should you draw blood from this man, you draw that blood from me.
Honoring the rim ritual of not bringing the dirt of the external world into the sacred meeting, I remove my boots at the end of the tunnel and slide on a pair of slippers before stepping out to join Diomedes. In his full power, he stands in the center of the speaking floor, holding a plain black spear, the spear of Akari. It is made of duroglass to show the dangers of war. I walk toward him under the gaze of the three Olympic knights who stand to either side of the speaking floor. They must be the only members of their order to have survived Far's invasion. Knees crackle in the risers, and robes shift as the Moon Lords stand to watch me approach Diomedes. There is an emblem of a golden flower on the floor. When I join Diomedes atop the emblem, he breaks a piece of bread from a loaf, and I eat it. After this guest rite, he nods for me to proceed. Now, as a guest of all the Moon Lords, I turn to face them. War has pruned the legislative body of its numbers and many of its military age members. But Atlas must have wanted an audience for his horrors, because they look as if they must have been in session when Far attacked. Though their robes are identical, each of the lords carries a heavy iron staff. The staffs are unremarkable, except for the iron hand on the end of each. These iron hands clutch the sphere the lord represents. The depictions of their worlds are as beautiful and colourful as the staffs are austere. The lords are despicable in so many ways, but there is dignity here in their cloudy gold eyes and hair shot through with white. Though not all are old, many are very young and must be the only members left in their delegation who survived the invasion, because the young ones sit alone, silent, noble. They all watch me with contempt.
You know me. I am Darrow of Mars, Arch-Imperator of the Republic, and I come to present a gift, ask a boon, and to beg your pardon. My gift, first.
I set the box on the floor and pull out the head of Volsung Far by its fallow tail. It shifts the wintry weather of the room like a storm god. There is no sound. The dignity the Moon Lords are obliged to retain before an enemy like me would not allow that. Yet They regard the head of Far with relief in their eyes. Pure, sweet relief. Gaia is the first to bang her staff on the floor. The entire room follows her lead, even the Codovan of Ganymede, whose dockyards I once destroyed. They recognize and affirm the gift and the worthiness of the act. The acclaim goes on for almost a minute. When it ends, I go to a knee. The Moon Lords sit. Their slippers whisper against the stone, their knees crackle, their robes shift.
I have slain your enemy, but I am the same man who turned the guns on the dockyards of Ganymede after the Battle of Ilium. That battle secured your independence, but my act cost the lives of thousands of your citizens and deprived the Rim of its best tool to secure a brighter future. We were allies. The act was dishonorable and a crime. I know I cannot hope to have your forgiveness as a man for that, but I hope to attain your formal pardon for the benefit of the peoples we represent.
No staffs recognize my apology, not even Gaia's. The senators of the Republic would be awed by the expressions of the lords. They are models of rugged, impassive haughtiness.
I have told you how this man saved my life after Kalaki and his defense of the peoples of Europa, but now you wonder why I have asked him here, Diomedes says. It was a reason important enough for him to risk coming here. I'm sure you think it was no risk. After all, we know his life is not in jeopardy. If we found him in the field, or if he'd entered this chamber as an interloper, his life would, of course, be forfeit. But as a guest of the Moon Council, who has now eaten of the same loaf that filled your mouths, never. But in his mind, it was dangerous for him to even walk in here, where any one of you could charge down and cut off his head. Because that is the world he comes from. That is the type of gold he has long battled and been conditioned to expect. He is a consequence and a product of core gold tyranny. He does not know us very well. For us and for him, that is a good thing. He came and risked your wrath because I, as hegemon, have offered to restore the military alliance my father made with the Rising.
The Moon Lords, silent so far, now erupt like a volcano. I glance back at Diomedes. He gives me an amused smile and motions me to stand. He tilts his head to Gaia. She rises in a fury and raves with her staff at the other lords.
Now, you roar! You, Pinnix, who fled Europa and left your own people to die! You, Isagoras, who cowered behind Ganymede's shields! Now you are brave! Now that Darrow has slain the beast and saved Europa! Now that my grandson has unveiled the master! Shame! Shame! Ungracious toads! You listened to the bombardments. You listened to the screams of your people. Listen now to your hegemon, who still bears the shadow of battle upon his body.
She sits and glowers. Diomedes forges ahead into the silence his grandmother carved.
For almost 12 years we have known independence. 12 years out of the 700 of our existence. 12 years because we formed an alliance with a fledgling movement and a young warlord. 12 years of independence purchased for the price of a dockyard. Who would not have paid that price?
He peers around. In that moment, he's not an orator. He's a blacksmith eyeing a piece of iron that doesn't want to bend. Now he works the bellows.
Our worlds are fragile, far apart. It is in our nature to be practical, except when we don't want to be. We are furious because trading those dockyards was not our choice. we take pride in having a choice. But isolation is not a choice. It is a fate. If we do not pick a side, others will choose for us. Our history and this fraudulent invasion prove that. Our enemy is and has always been the tyrannical nature of the Golds in the Core. Today, they manifest as Atlas and Atalantia. That is why I have offered Darrow and Lysander to form a triumvirate against them.
Then where is Loon?
A Codovan woman asks.
Atlas, Lysander. It is easy to throw around their names when they are not here. Why does Loon not come and face his shame like Darrow has?
Loon has been unwavering in his respect toward the Rim, Diomedes replies. He sailed out here as a friend, as an ally. I have no doubt he will yet again prove himself to be a man of honor who seeks unity instead of division. When he joins us, he will bring the head of the Puppet Master to join that of the Puppet.
He gestures to Far's head.
Then he will ask your pardon, as Darrow has, for the concessions he made to Atlas.
When?
The Codovan asks.
Soon,
Diomedes says, with a glance at me. I can barely think of anything but Cassius up there fighting the Fear Knight. He and Diomedes can't both be wrong about Lysander. Can they? Achilliston asks very softly, I do not understand. Are we not to seek vengeance, then, against the braves who did the raping, the killing, the burning? My moon is not just broken. It is ash. Diomedes considers.
An enemy sicks a corn hound on you. It rips out your liver, kills your friends. Do you spend your treasure, your life, hunting down the hound, or the enemy who unleashed it? Atalantia sponsored this attack. She helped lure us into the war. I would turn that corn hound, the Volk, on her, and watch with a smile as it rips her to shreds.
Am I to simply forget the wound Darrow rent in my moon when our docks fell?
The Codovan asks.
Yes, if you want to keep your moon, Gaia says, Atalantia will come. Not tomorrow, not the day after. But when she comes, she'll kill everyone in this room who does not kneel. Even if you kneel, she will probably kill you and install one of her creatures in your ancestral home. She does not need to compromise. We cannot beat her alone, so we must compromise.
Diomedes' attention has shifted to a green attendant signalling him. He motions the attendant over. The green whispers in his ear, and Diomedes lifts a hand for silence.
We are receiving a tight beam from the bridge of the Lightbringer, he announces with a smile, and motions the green to put it on.
The hairs on the back of my neck rise.
Why a tight beam? I ask Diomedes.
Why is Lysander not coming in person?